for just about everything for the outdoors. Go to MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Look, y'all, your elk hunting mindset is everything. In part one of our series, we covered mental success breakers we saw in 2023. This week, we give possible solutions to help you get through those and be the best you can possibly be on your next elk hunt. Welcome to part two of our Elk Hunting Mentality, Mistakes, and Mentor series. The goal of this series is to take our actual boots on the ground in 2023 season experiences and help you learn, prepare, and get on that success train in 2024. So pull up a chair and reach your hands out to the campfire and let's get that dog a-hunting. That discussion, our Elk Bros shout-outs, and questions from our Elk Bros mailbox. So, my friends, pull up a chair, adjust your volumes just right, and welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting.
Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting, brought to you by ElkGrows.com, with your host, Gilbert Ornelas, and elk hunting coach, Joe Gilley. You want to hunt elk, and they live to hunt elk. Their goal is to share with you what they have learned grinding it out for over 35 seasons, doing what they love. So come on into camp and set a spell. Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunters.
Hello there, everyone. If it's your first time with us, glad to have you. Hope you enjoy our show. And as always, for those blue collar hunters following our show and grinding it out with us every week, welcome back to Elk Camp. I'm Gilbert Ornelas, the host of your show, coming to you live from Spring, Texas, and joining me tonight's crew. That's right. We've got the Northern Don and your newest Elk Bros hunting coach, Mr. Manano Graterón from the Venezuelan Mafia. We've got the legend in the house tonight from Cuesta, New Mexico, Mr. R.C. Knox. And that's right, we got the man with the golden voice, the owner of the Western Contours podcast and Western Fly Covers, man. He is the man with the golden voice, Mr. Guy Duplanche's in the house.
What's up, boys?
We don't have the ninja Chav in the house with us tonight, but we got
he's out there sleeping somewhere.
Yeah, we got your elk hunting coach, Mr. Joe Gilley, WWJGD's in the house. We got it teed up. Let's hit it deep, Joe. What's up, fellas?
What's going on? Be going.
Oh, no.
Oh, my goodness, man. Yeah, Chav. Chav, like, lives 200 yards down the road, man. He's like, I got computer issue. Couldn't
calling him out, bro.
Here, you know.
I drove 13 hours to do a podcast.
I'm telling you, man. I was like, dude, you got the iPad. I mean, we got all this technology these days. Come on, man.
Go right on the phone.
Yeah.
Chav, I think Chav has
what'd you
plans,
do to him, man. Joe? You overwork him or what?
No, man. I haven't, you know, no. We ain't hardly even seen each other, man. I think we saw each other at our nephew's football game, over in Albuquerque.
Well, maybe that's the problem. You got him all pissed off, Joe. You ain't been spending no time with him.
Well, we went to the movies.
I mean, 200 yards. He has to drive by the house to get out of the neighborhood.
I know, man. What's up with that? You know what it is? He's upset. He's upset, man, because we got somebody that wants to do an Elk Bros cologne, right? Or Elk Bros.
And he wants to name it.
It already stinks.
Oh my gosh.
He wants to name it the Ninja.
Man, that might be better just to go with Chav's scent. I mean, the Elk Bros cologne. I mean, talking. Joe's butt, Virginia, beer on the ground, 5-day old socks. I mean, come on, man. Ask KK how my tent was smelling after we ate all that Pequena and stuff.
I think we should call it after paella. We should call it after paella.
The pearl is a paella, right?
Yes.
We could get him to, Manana, we could get it to make him like the nose jammer smell, man, which smells like wedding cake, man.
I mean, just the mental, the wheels, the gears turning on that smell.
Oh, my gosh.
It stinks that off so already, nasty, man. Bro.
Well. Oof. You know, when I saw that, I was like, you know, I'm just the type of person, I mean, like, number one, you know, I don't like to, I'm not like Manano. I like to smell like nothing out in the woods. You know, Manano's got all this stuff and spray and everything, you know, when he goes out there. And I'm like, and I thought it was kind
don't
of.
Don't get this tired of Joe.
So I send it to Gil, and I'm figuring Gil's gonna be like, oh, ha, ha, ha. And he's like, heck yeah, dude, let's do it.
call it upwind, ode to Joe.
You know what? That's a great, hey, upwind. That, you just found it right there.
That's the name, right?
Yeah, right there, man. Upwind. Ode to Joe.
Unbelievable.
That's too funny, man.
Oh, okay. So seriously, let me get a little serious, man. First, I want to thank everybody, man, for the emails, the texts, the messages that we've been getting about. We've been getting stuff on successes, memories made, these life-changing experience that people have felt and been a part of. And, you know, I don't think people understand really what it makes me feel like, us feel like, when we get this stuff from people finding success with the soloist and with our soloist bugle tube and our calls and stuff. I mean, it is just so cool. And I know, Guy, like when you see guys out there and they're sporting those, Western fly covers, man, you know, and they're doing it all different ways. And when you, it's just this pride factor that you feel. Yeah. So, you know,
it's like today on social media, Joe, I saw a guy on the Hunt Wars deal. He's rocking a Elk Bros hat and some Elk Bros swag, right? I mean, you're just proud when you see something like that. It catches you off guard. It's like, wow, check this dude out. He's got some Elk Bros swag on, you know?
Yeah, it's so cool, man. Cool. And so
it's not even the swag and everything. It's more that your purpose is being fulfilled, right?
Yeah, like, man.
You know, that education and wanting to pass that knowledge on and stuff. And that's really, I mean, that's where the home runs are at. It's cool to see him in shirts and have, the pack fly out, but it's more like, man, you survived that hunt because of that, or you laid that bull down because of that, or you got on that mule deer because of that little bit, man. It's huge when it comes to that stuff.
Know, I just know how I felt, man. You know, I was buying Larry D. Jones calls and I was buying Wayne Carlton's calls, and I looked at those people like, you know, looked so up to them. And had an opportunity actually to be out of shoot with Larry D. Jones. And I've talked with Wayne, never got to meet him in person. You know, Mark and I talk all the time, but you know, the idea that we're doing something that other people are using like that is just, it's too
thrilling. And now you're seeing stuff like this right here. I mean, that's crazy.
I'll talk about that in a little bit too. And, and for those people that are listening, you know, he's holding up a new reed that we're getting ready to talk about as well this evening. But, you know, when I get an email, and I was just on the phone with one of our listeners yesterday, and that's where an idea came for a new type of episode that I want to do called Conversations, because, you know, he gets on there and he's just like, Joe, I want to tell you, and I want you to tell the boys, you guys save my life. You know, my life has changed because of the things that I've heard you say that you believe in, and got me to look at things differently and change my outlook in life. Or, you know, you saw a post today that I had on a gentleman that, you know, this guy went from a size 40 to a size 36 breeches, lost 40 some pounds, is, you know, he's extended his life, man. And he's like, honestly says, you know, the things I heard you guys say have saved my life. So, I mean, that's powerful.
That's huge.
Nah, no doubt. And, you know, we make a little light of it, Joe, but I'm very humbled that, Valerie Boffy with, Scent Craft would call, you know, email us and want to, you know, even talk about having the Elk Bros signature scent out there. I mean, dude, how humbling is that? I mean, we laugh about it and joke about it, but man, you got people that are wanting to be part, you know, and even making, you know, cologne and stuff like that. It's crazy, man.
Yeah.
But you chuckle about it and you make a little light of it, but you know, I want Valerie to know that we're not making fun of her.
It's just, not at all,
in
man.
Our wildest dreams, we would have never thought somebody wanted to make a cologne after
us. That's a forward thinking woman there, boy.
Yeah, no.
Think
no
she can
doubt.
Come up I with mean, a good scent for Elk Bros.
Look, and you know, Joe, I dig that about her because she's not embarrassed at all. She's coming after right out the gate. Man, swinging. You know, definitely want to get back with her and talk with her. Just
she said that, you know, what you guys represent in the outdoors and the ruggedness and, you know, the work ethic. I don't know how we put that into a scent, but, you know,
I don't either, but I dig it.
But keep my mouth shut.
Look at RC.
Yeah, RC, you're horrible, man.
And hey, let me segue over. Speaking of new ventures, like the scent, Guy is doing a new venture, man. Congratulations, partnering with Western Hunt Fest, dude.
Yeah, man. Yes. Jumped on with the boys at the end of last season and. Was a part, you know, just being a part of it. And I'm like, look, I want to do more for this event. So, you know, we, the three of us linked up and, you know, here we are, man, trying to swing for the fences. The event grew, you know, pretty good last year. And this year we're swinging for the fences, trying to double last year's growth and, make it the place to be, man, to test your mental prowess, your physical prowess, your behind your weapon. And that was the reason that it was started, right? It was to take that fun of 3D archery, and hunting season prep and just put it in one place, right? And really we want to be the litmus test on whether folks are ready for season. So, added some venues this year and going to stretch the legs a bit. And,
so you have venues near New Mexico at the Whittington Center. There's going to be a venue in Colorado Springs at Air Force Academy. There's going to be a venue in Reno, Nevada, a venue in Flagstaff, Arizona. Correct?
I'll cut you off at Flagstaff. So you're good up to Air Force Base. Flagstaff, we're working on. Not sure if it's going to be there. Solidified events right now are Whittington Center and Raton. We're going to have a shoot at Cameo on the western slope of Colorado. Reno, Nevada, at Silver Arrow Bowman. And then, we're going to bring it back to the original venue for the championship in Bailey at the end of season. So, yeah.
Very cool, man.
Yeah,
and for people that don't know about Western Hunt Fest, it's a 3D shoot that has, it's family oriented. There's so many cool things and they have a signature event. It is a pack out competition and.
Yeah. Pack out challenge,
man. And what a great event that is. And I really love the fact that because there's so many people that say, oh yeah, I can go in 2 miles. I can go in 3 miles and I can pack one of them critters out. And then you go do that pack out challenge, which is a mile and a half, right?
Yeah. Roughly. Yep.
Yeah. About a mile and a half. And you got to get that critter from one side to the other and your equipment. And you find out real quick what
where
is
you're at. Yeah. Yeah. And that was really the idea behind it, right? Is to bring everything we do in the field into this event preseason, add to the 3D shoot and really test it. So yeah, we got the pack out challenge, our elk calling comp, right? I mean, you know, the three of us, Ephraim, Jeff and myself, we're all elk fanatics. So we got the calling comp. We're adding a sprint challenge this year. So some folks, you know, weren't up for the miles. But we wanted to give an opportunity for points for the championship and this big prize package we're putting together. So we added a sprint challenge. And as we dial that in, we'll let folks know about it. But yeah, we're pretty excited about it. And then we have,
where can they find information on that, bud?
WesternHuntFest.com, okay. Or reach out to me on, you know, on Western Contours. You can reach out to Ephraim on Pack 'Em Out Apparel. And we'll be happy to answer any questions, get you signed up. Registration is going to kick off here pretty soon. Folks are interested, you know, please jump on, take a look at it. You won't be sorry. That pack out challenge is something else.
Cool. We can probably put something on that in our booth because, this will be the first time Elk Bros, y'all, will be at the International Sportsman's Expo in Denver. You Coloradians, man, we have so many of y'all. Again, thank you. Like, this goes back to thanking everybody. We have so many of y'all that listen in to the show and stuff. And we're going to be at that International Sportsman's Expo in Denver, January 11th through the 14th. I'll be doing a couple of seminars. We're going to have some swag. We'll be doing podcasts right there in the booth. So if you're around in January, come visit us there. Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I don't want to let it go, Joe. Sorry. I'm going to back us up back to Hunt Fest. But we have our elk calling seminars. So, that was a big deal last year and we'll see where Joe goes, but, it might be a Elk Bros run thing at all our events. So we're hoping to nail that down. So
yeah, we'll get all that worked out. But man, I love doing the seminar there and, it's such a neat event. And you know, the way that we include people in that, I'm looking forward to them.
Is this, Armando with you guy in the first page of the website?
Yeah, Bo Hitch was there.
Yeah, Bo Hitch is
there. Yeah, that's Armando. That's
shout awesome. Out to Armando, too, for hooking my boys up.
Yeah, he changed our life.
Yeah, shout out to Mondo and the Bo Hitch guys. Man, they hooked my boys up north. We appreciate it, Mondo. Thanks a lot for all you do for us. And because carrying your bow sucks.
He changed our game, brother.
Now he's changed the rifle. He's got an adaptation.
Oh, yeah, he's got a nice one now.
I'm going to have to check that out, too.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right.
Yep. Very cool.
Especially if I start doing more rifle hunting, that's for sure.
Let's rock, man.
Well, Joe, let's get this party started and head over to the Elk Bros mailbox. I'll take the first one. Mr. Bill Steiger from Grants Pass, Oregon. He said, this last podcast, you talked about mental fortitude, which I do agree is key. We refine our shooting and physical ability through practice. But how would you suggest a person practices, refines, improves on their mental fortitude? Are there specific exercises that someone can do and how one gets prepared?
Well, I want to hear if anybody else, what comes to your mind on this, because I've kind of talked about this before and I have some suggestions, but
I'll lead what really drives and motivates me is to not let my teammates down. Right. And, that really what drives and motivates me. And I know what the grind looks like. I've been injured. I've been sick. I went through it all this year as well. It'd be injured, sick. We dealt with all of those things. You just got to know that you can last one more day. And I really pride myself on being able to push. Like I said, a lot of times I'm not very fast at what I do, but I make a plan and we execute the plan and generally things work out. I possess a skill set where I can call elk, to me. So that helps, man. But your preparation before you get on that mountain, I can't say, especially bow hunting elk, right? In September, and even first part of October, you being able to speak the language is so important when you get on the mountain that will cover a lot of bases. And then you being able to understand your surroundings. The preparation we do, the things that we do to get prepared for the area that we're hunting in, you know, if you know you're going to be at 12,000 feet, you better do a bunch of cardio, you know, because it's going to whip your tail.
At 12,000 feet.
You do what, Bubba?
You said do a bunch of cardio, and I said at 12,000.
Yeah, and it's hard to, you know, it's hard to rush that, man. You know, you got to do the Carl Gamage cardio where you put the Walmart bag over your head and tie a knot in it and poke a hole in it, you know. I mean, that's the Carl Gamage cardio. It never did work for me. I looked crazy and people called the law on me and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, I tried it, you know.
We're not sponsored by Walmart, y'all.
Yeah, no.
But I think we're missing what he's asking here, though, man, because he's saying, like, you know, we refine our shooting. We do reps. If we want to get in shape, there's things that we can do to get in shape. There's exercises we can do. There's exercises that we can do for our shooting. There's exercises we can do for our calling. Are there exercises that somebody can do to improve their mental fortitude?
Sure.
If we just reference what he's talking about, right, in exercise and our shooting, is we like to stay in our limits, right? Everybody, I shouldn't say everybody. That's a hell of a generalization, right? You gotta be able to put yourself in a position to where you're uncomfortable as you're doing those things. Mm-hmm. And the more uncomfortable you are and the more you succeed at those things, the better that you get. Now, the thing that I don't think you can prepare for is getting your butt kicked out there on the mountain, because that's really where it starts to drive home, right? It's one thing to prepare.
In what way are you getting your butt
kicked? And that's where
it's quiet. The elk aren't, the air quotes, the elk aren't talking, right? Or you're looking around, you're going, oh man, there's all these hunters, right? That's when you just have to suck it up. At the end of it's easy for me to say because I've done it for so many years solo, right?
Right.
I know how it feels to give into those stresses.
Negative.
And that's really, yes. And that's really what keeps me motivated, because the regret at the end of season of not going in that drainage or up that hill or whatever it may be beats you a lot harder than just saying, man, I got it in me. Now, if you got to pick, you know, give yourself a little pat on the back and kick back for, you know, a few hours one day you know, call yourself a few names and realize that you're just crying. That's where I find it, man. I don't know that there's any real preparation outside of looking back and understanding. And this is funny that this question came up, because I didn't read it, but I was thinking about this today. Mm-hmm. And it's the, you know, the one of the things that I'm sure all of us learned through life is I've never done anything worth doing that wasn't hard to do.
No doubt.
And anything that I accomplished, it was because I never gave up on it.
Well, and it's because we failed.
You have to have that mindset.
Which, because we got better at it because we failed so much. You know, we failed a lot of times, and that's how.
Yeah, but failing at something and preparing yourself for those situations, I think, are different.
It's the failure mechanism that helps you prepare for it the next time. Right?
When you're talking about exercises to do it, you know, I liked what Guy was saying as far as, and I think it's so true that it's human nature to practice the things that we're good at and avoid the things that we're not good at. And when you do that and you end up in a situation of frustrations because now those things that you avoided are like, they're shining,
they're
magnified. They're weaknesses, man. And I agree. I think no matter whether it's the physical thing or whether it's the shooting thing or whether it's the calling thing, you have to find those things within that are difficult for you and overcome those, because that is an exercise in facing things that are possible frustration.
You don't know it till you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's how I feel about this. I feel like we blame other things, other people, the animals, the woods, the weather, for our own frustrations and incompetence, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do as our out. Or we just say, you know, and what I mean, we blame. Sometimes we're like, okay, I'm done. I'm quitting right here because of A, B, C, and D of something else that I'm putting the blame on rather than myself, right? So I think this happens daily in our lives. I think the best exercise, and I think I've said this before, is you pick days, pick a day. I don't care if it's Wednesday, hump day, Thursday, Saturday, and you make that a no out day where you don't take outs. In other words, when you have a problem that comes up for you, you don't put it aside. You don't let it go to the wayside and then focus someplace else. You take that problem that is difficult and frustrating, because that's what we do. We like to avoid frustration. We like to avoid things that make us feel bad. And you have
all of us.
And deal with
it. I can't do it. I mean, I'm not built that way. When I got something bothering me, I got to go take care of it. So that's just my mental makeup, right?
But that's called, dealing and doing workarounds. I think that is the key to dealing with frustrations in the elk woods. I think one of the reasons I really believe in some of the successes I've had is not necessarily because I'm any more skilled. I think it's just the attitude, the willingness to do a workaround, to find a way to,
no doubt you have this will that's uncanny, but your skill set you possess, being able to speak the language is huge.
Oh, absolutely.
People can't. But you put you up against a guy that can't.
There was a point when I started this that I didn't have that skill set.
I understand. I understand.
So all it was then was, it's like, okay, if I'm not able to get it done this way, or if those animals aren't here, where the heck are they?
And are they? Yeah.
Why aren't I there? So it's just, but what are specific exercises I can do? And that's what I'm saying is, when you have a problem and it looks like it's something you're not able to do, work on doing a workaround. Work on finding
it. Or when you get to that wall, just push through the wall, right? Because that's a lot of times with that mental, when you're on the mountain, it's just a matter of saying, I'm doing it.
One more yard. Yep.
Yeah.
One
just,
more
what I mean? I don't care. Look at your feet, right? Yeah. If you're looking and you got to get out to the end of that ridge so you can text or FaceTime Joe and Gil, right? And it's 5 miles out and it's hell getting there. Look down at your feet, man. It is just one step at a time,
man.
Right? Just go.
Can't tell you how many days I looked at the back of Joe's feet, man, and I don't even want to look up because I know what's coming, man. But it's one step at a time.
That's all it is.
And I knew that if I could go one more step, I could get there. One more step. But it's an attitude that you adopt when you do this, because this shit is hard, man. Yeah. It is hard to do. People that elk hunt with a bow and do it the way we do it, it's hard. And you got to prepare yourself for that hard. And like Guy said, day three, day four, it will slap you in the face like a crappy mop, man. And it you have to push through. If you don't, it'll break you. And listen, guys that are just starting out, it's okay. You'll figure this out, and you don't quit. Keep moving forward. Like I said, you need a little break. You need to go talk to yourself. You need a little mental health afternoon or whatever it is, man. Take it and figure some things out and understand that, if you keep working hard, you guys got this, man. Sometimes just working hard's enough, and keeping your head down and hustling it's enough. But I think it's a mindset, Joe. It's a mindset that you learn and you adopt.
And you have to exercise that mindset in your everyday life, because you only have so many days during the elk season. So you have to exercise that mindset. RC Knox and what he does out on that ranch comes across problems daily, and problems that when you first look at them sometimes are problems that look like they're insurmountable obstacles. There's things that you're just not able to control, and you're not able to control nature. You're not able to control, somebody else's prices. You're not able to control somebody getting sick. There's all of these things, but yet he continues to move forward. So that's what I mean. Like RC, like for you, when you have problems, And this is what I see as an exercise. I see this as mental fortitude. It's easy for us to go, screw it. I'm done.
Yeah, I'm done.
I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm out. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, one of the things that, I picked up on, and a lot of people will take and, bottle this stuff up. I mean, in your everyday life, and they'll either go to the gym or they'll go to, they always have some kind of an out, you know, to where they can have this release and,
oh, to clear their head, right?
To clear their head, exactly. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you could actually do in the woods is pick up a damn big stick and just start beating the tree. Who knows? A damn bull might come in.
Yeah, right.
Manano did that and called in a wolf.
Worked in Canada.
You know what's funny is I go to the woods to clear my head.
Yeah.
Best place to do it, man.
I
have some of the best talks in the world with me and the good Lord right there in the middle of the woods.
You bet.
Some of it's like a butt chewing on my part, and I feel it all over me. So yeah, it's a big, big, big relief.
I kind of like RC's take on it because, right, I mean, it sounds cliche, but you know, on the mountain as in life, right? And you really have to adopt your pursuit to life. And I mean, and that's one of the things that I've loved about elk hunting, right? Is my growth through elk hunting and how I tackle things. I mean, it's a lifestyle. It legitimately is a lifestyle, mm-hmm. as cliche as that may sound, but.
Well, I think we're kindred spirits too, a lot of us, right? Mm-hmm. So we adopt that lifestyle and that kindred spirit that we know. I mean, we look at one another and we know. I knew when I saw you after 14, 15 days, God knew what you were going through, right? I knew that anguish. I felt it all over you, you know. Mm-hmm. I prayed for you every night that you could get a little bit of release out of that, you know. And, you know, one of the best coaches in our squad, I mean, but that mountain, it'd give him all he wanted, you know.
He'll take it. You guys, you just got to give it.
He never backed down. Never backed down a second, you know.
I just feel like, man, that I don't believe in the C word. And I used to not allow my athletes to say can't for any reason.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. It just to me, when somebody says I can't do something, it doesn't mean that they're not able to do it. It means they're not willing to try. And, you know, for me, I honestly, truly believe and live by the fact that if there's a will, there's a way. It might be hard. It might be difficult. It might take me a while. I might need some help, you know, but yeah. Where there is a will, there is a way. And I would just tell you that, you know, Bill, is that, you know, in your everyday life, when you come across things, there is your exercise. There is the things that you can do to work on refining your mental fortitude, is that when something comes in front of you that looks like a roadblock, don't say, I can't do that. Find a way. Where there's a will, there's a way. So
great advice.
Exactly. Great advice.
Great advice, Jim.
All right. Abby Chavera. Gillette, Wyoming. When rifle hunting in October, our dates were the 13th through the 19th here in Wyoming, with both a cow and a bull tag, do you think the elk will come in with calls at this time of season? And if so, would it be better to do roundup bugles or cow calls only? Thank you. God bless you guys.
I just hunted those dates. So the elk were pretty quiet. The bulls were, they'd fire up in the mornings and at night, but the cows were very callable. So I used lost calf calls, lost cow calls, and then
did it work?
Absolutely, it worked. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it kind
of. No problem calling elk.
I'm not using Roundup bugles.
No, man.
Yeah, I'm not using Roundup bugles. So.
I actually did a big, like, challenge bugle and got the lead cow to come to me doing that. Sounded like a big herd bull. And then the lost calf call. And the lost calf made those cows, all 44 of them, come from 850 yards to dang near across the fence on us. I mean, it was the most unbelievable sight I've ever seen in my life. A herd of 44 cows stampeding down the mountain to come find that calf that was lost. Crazy how that worked.
So the answer
and I'm texting Joe the whole time. You're not going to believe this, dude. Cause I'm really kind of screwed. I'm out in the middle of nothing.
Wow.
Really got not much cover. As soon as I make a pipe, they're going to know we're there. Right. So it needed to be something that was, you know, that was going to draw the cows to me because they had all the bulls, you know, and there were six bulls in that group and we called them. I mean, if we don't got a fence in our area, we're celebrating over one of the biggest bulls I've ever seen in my life, you know, but the fence line held it up.
No camera, no video, no proof of it.
Well, it's hard to video when you got all that other stuff going on and trying to get Mr. Howard lined up and stuff like that. I mean, it was tough. I would have loved to have had all that on video.
Manano wants receipts, bro.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
So the answer to the question is...
The answer to that is we need a cameraman. That's the answer to that.
The answer to the question...
How cold is the answer, I think.
Answer is heck yes.
The answer is yes, elk will come into calls at this time of season. I don't always depend on it, you know, you can get lucky and sometimes, the rut starts to go a little bit later and there's still bulls that are with the cows and things are going. I mean, it was this year. It was like there were a lot of, estruses that were happening and bulls were screaming still. Now, once you get towards the 19th, it's getting hard, man, because a lot of those big guys have started splitting off and you're going to see a lot of these younger bulls with them. And, you know, those other big guys are going to go into holes. I use calls for a different thing there just to maybe stand them up or something if I need to, but
it was crazy seeing them that late all, you know, all gathered up, Joe. I mean, bulls still in bachelor groups. It was nuts seeing it. Yeah.
I don't think that was a bachelor group you were seeing. Bro, I think you were seeing bulls with a bunch of cows still.
No, I'm talking about the four or five other younger bulls that were together that we saw.
Correct, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, they're satellite bulls, you know, younger bulls, but they're all together. They ain't with cows and they ain't with a herd.
Generally, during this time, you're going to start seeing those big guys go off and you're going to see these smaller bulls that are going to start acting like, you know, pseudo herd bulls and they're going to get in there and start feeling their oats, practicing for the next year. And they're still bugling, you know, but they're basically still, they're not necessarily breeding. Right. Yeah.
That's not, and I think something that happens too, Joe, is these older bulls that were the herd bull, they've been run down on. And some of these 4 and 5 year old bulls that are still pretty randy whip them, you know, and they take the herd and they cast them out to the side. So a lot of times you can get one of them older bulls to come take a look, you know, at least come out and look, see what's going on. I mean, when you're with a rifle, if you're within 300 or 400 yards of it, you know, and look, I didn't call a lot. It was just light cow calling just to, you know, kind of cast around out there. It wasn't like insistent until I got eyes on them and then it got insistent.
So basically she's hearing that you're using cow calls. Right.
Yes.
You can use, like, calf. If you have bulls with cows and you're trying to pull the cows to you, you can sound like a dominant bull and maybe pull those cows over to you. You tried that as well.
Yeah.
So that kind of works. And remember, it's rifle season. We're really just trying to get them to sound off and be in a position where we can get a shot within, you know, our effective range. Right.
And try to slip in and around them, you know.
Yeah, the best part is, man, is just having them sound off so that you can move in on them, right?
That's right.
I think the cow calling is really great. I think that's the way to go with it. You can bring cows to you with the calf calls, with the cow calls. I wouldn't do any kind of roundup bugle. Location bugles, yes, you can do that early in the morning in the dark to get them to sound off a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. But right now we are October, what right now? 26, 27 right now.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing right now is a lot of small raghorns that are still with the cows. And we're starting to see now these other bulls starting to bachelor up. I just had 3 giant herds cross the highway when I was coming home the other night. One giant herd of cows with a few spikes in it. Another giant herd of cows with a few spikes, maybe a rag. And then we hit another group and it had to be about 14, 15 bulls that were already bachelored up. So that's already happening at this time. So when you're cow calling and you get a response of the cows doesn't necessarily mean this time of year that they're going to have a bull with them. And the bulls that are going to be with them a lot of times can be smaller bulls. So it just depends what you're after, right?
Right.
Now, if you have both a cow and a bull tag, you're in high cotton, right?
Yeah.
Because you get in on them and you got a choice to make, you know, hopefully there's a small bull with them. If so, you know, you can pop. I mean, you got a twofer right there, right? If there's just cows there, well, you can punch that tag and continue hunting looking for that bull. So
it's the high cotton thing. So I don't have to bend down to pick it up. I can just stand straight up.
That's exactly it, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Less work, man. Less work.
Less work.
Up next. Thanks, Abby, for that question. Craig Sauer of Spokane, Washington. Does the overall size of bugle tube add to the projection or volume in general for improved locate calling, or would you be able to get more volume from just using a different diaphragm, like a thicker, tighter stretch latex or bow? I know that guy's just dying here. Look at this.
So I got some data, man. My sound guy, I wish I could have dropped that before this season, but the guy that's doing the sound for that whole test series, he had some other obligations, so it fell behind. And I'm not going to give up everything. Size, yes, it matters, but it's very, very minor. What I will say is material is the biggest factor. Density of material is one of the biggest factors that we saw in the testing that we did across a wide array of bugle tubes. There is some design factors. If you're just taking a wiffle ball bat, you know, you're going to have some Joe Gilia lungs. It's dense material and,
back pressure.
Yes, it matters, right? It absolutely matters.
Yeah.
But when we're talking just the tube, repeatability from two callers in this, right? It was about material and it was so obvious after, call it number 5 out of almost 10 different tubes, that the material and the design had a lot to do with it. It was pretty interesting.
So
I don't want to give up at all because that's still coming, but
yeah. So let's take the whole tube part out of it and say it's just one tube, one single tube. Can the change in the type of latex of the diaphragm give you more volume?
You can get to higher pitches.
Yeah. Well,
certain diaphragms
and
more decibel.
Yeah. You know, you pick your latex that you're able to put on, man. You absolutely can get more volume.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I mean, I did all of my cow calling and calf calling with the sugar. It's just made for it. But if you're going to go blow 10 bugles on that, you can't cow call with it anymore. It just stretches it too much, right?
So get that loudness either.
Yes. You can go to the grinder, get all of that, right? Just won't have as soft a core with the cow and calf sounds, right? The Burnham Red, I mean, this call right here, do all of it. And, it's amazing. Great sound, great tone, great cow calls, great calf calls, great buzz. I mean, and great bugles, you know, and it holds up. It's a thicker latex.
But if we're talking volume, the thicker the latex, the more the volume, because you're able to put more pressure on it.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So
that's definitely an equation. Yeah. So if you're trying to reach out strictly just for location, trying to get out there distance and be careful about that. Everybody thinks that you got to send calls way out there, you know, and elk hear better than we do anyway. And sometimes you could actually have elk way out there responding that you're not even hearing respond. Right. Yeah. So, it's not always that you just want to go way out there. You can also, you know, we always want to do our calls from near to far anyway. So that's something that, you know, you might want to think about. It's the benefit of really bouncing that out. I think if you find better areas to call more than depending on your tube, and like if you're calling over bowls, if you are bouncing off the walls of canyons, if you're calling into areas that are boxes that it's going to reverberate in, and you're going to be able to hear those sounds coming back to you better because of that style as well too. Mm-hmm. So,
high pressure or low pressure too.
I got a question though. What if you look at the question, Mm-hmm. And Joe, when you said, you know, or one of you guys said, I'm sorry I had to get up, I heard my wife go, no. And I saw, saw something was wrong, but she's on the phone with my daughter. Right. Freaking out. Is they hear different than we do, right? So what are we really asking? Like, you know, is this, is it even a necessary, I don't want to say it like that. Right? Like, is it necessarily what we should be focusing on with this question, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to be, and we hear it all the time, right? Where you get a guy and he's piping off a locate and that locate is like 30 seconds long, right?
Yes. Which no bull lasts 30 seconds long.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That would be me. I'll crank out a locate and go all the way from Florida all the way up to Connecticut.
Yeah, man. But you're embellishing through that, right? Yeah. With your double bugle and things like that. Yeah. And you're coming up and down and it's not just.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of, remember when you're a kid and you go, la.
In a fan.
No, you do that until you run out of breath. Right. That's how some of the locates. They're that long in length, right? So what, you know, what
most bugles don't last past 5 seconds,
right? I mean, they're short, right? Yeah. So, you know, what is that improved locate calling? I guess
I'll still locate for 5-6 seconds, man.
That's more realistic.
That's fine. Yeah. But I'm saying, you know,
a 30 second one. I mean, dude, everybody's going.
Oh, I'd like to see somebody hit a 30 second one, man. Anyway,
I think you could do it, Joe.
I'm, you know, my pondering is what does that really mean? An improved locate, right? I mean, if you're out there in the woods and you're not hearing anything and you're throwing out your locate bugle, it's not necessarily that you have a bad locate bugle.
Right.
You may be in the wrong spot.
Right.
You may have high barometric pressure.
Yep.
You know, they may not be responding for X, Y, or Z,
yeah.
Right? It's not necessarily a bad locate.
My thing is do your own testing. Get your tube. Go get somebody out there 300-400 yards from you.
But that still doesn't do it because what do you have to compare to?
No, I understand.
And then what are the elk from here in that?
If you got several different tubes like Guy did his testing, right, then you can find out which one you like better, which way you
I had comparison.
Right.
Right? Because we had elk bugling from 30 yards away
right.
and elk bugling from 800 yards away.
Right.
And we were able to take each bugle tube and put it side by side, wavelength-wise, to these actual elk bugles from distance. Right. And do the comparison to understand what the tubes are actually coming across. Now it's still our ears. So it was a test in distance and are our sounds carrying as their sounds carry as we put the wavelengths together and side by side through all these tubes.
Right.
So it was poor man scientific, if you will, just to understand what we're doing, you know, versus what the elk are doing and what they're hearing.
And I can't, I mean, really why we did there, it. A lot of times people mistake the sound that they're hearing in some of these tubes because it reverberates in there and it's close to us and it's close to our ears and it does reverberate in there.
Yeah. Oh,
it's taking that sometimes for volume that's going out.
That was very interesting in doing that, right? So as I started to kind of edit this stuff together for the sound guy and I was hearing it and I'm like, wow, that's a trip, you know, and like I said, it was two of us. So as I'm listening to my buddy do it, I remember what he sounded like, you know, here with this tube. Well, then when I heard it on the recording and, you know, the mics are 150, 200 yards away, it was like, what in the world was that? Right. Yeah. I mean, totally different sound. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Really.
And I think the, you know, the overall gist to the question is, does the size of the bugle tube and, add to the projection of volume. I don't necessarily think that adds as much projection to the volume as it does the stretch you got on that latex. I think
it's a factor. It's a big factor, but I would, like I said, to me, it was material.
Yeah.
Definitely right. Material.
Material.
Yep. All right. Let's rock, man.
Well, guys, you know what time it is. It's time for our Elk Bros shout out. Shout out to our followers in a few cities with the most listeners topping our charts this week, Joe.
Yes, sir. But, man, it is back. The spinner winner wheel.
Oh, the spinner winner wheel.
Yes, sir. We're going to reward some of our reviewers For those folks that leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or give us a comment on our YouTube channel, what we're doing is putting those people's names and where they are from, and we're placing them in our Elk Bros Spin a Winner Wheel. Guys and gals, we are going to spin. The winner's going to get a Wapiti River Outdoors call, a Travis O'Shea special there. And awesome. For the first time, somebody is going to get, they're going to get a first edition of our Elk Bros Burnham Red call, made by Native by Carlton. Our friend Mark over at Native by Carlton has created a signature call for us. This is one of the first. It is our only medium frame offering that we have. All right, here we go. Spinning, 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 spinning. Is it?
Yeah.
Richard Williamson.
Williams.
Pike County, Kentucky.
Pike County, Kentucky.
Got some calls coming your way.
Sweet. Congrats, cool. Richard.
Yeah, congratulations.
Start using them now, Rich.
Yes.
Let's go. All right. So let's head to our top listening cities here, man. Our top listening city most commonly associated with the, how do you say that, Gil? What is it?
Bakken.
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 Bakken. Is located at the near confluence of the Yellowstone and Missouri Rivers. Originally called Little Muddy, the local recreation area has an indoor wave machine. This blew my mind. For surfers and boarders. Y'all, the Lewis and Clark expedition passed through this area. They were not wakeboarding. They weren't surfing in 1804. And this is Williston, North Dakota. Yeah.
Williston, North Dakota. Another interesting fact, there's more millionaires per capita in Williston, North Dakota than anywhere in the United States.
Really?
How do you know that? How do you know that?
Because I serviced all them oil wells that are up there, brother.
You know,
and people, they ain't drilling for hundreds of barrels of oil. They're drilling for thousands of barrels of oil a day.
You know what's
place.
Weird is I heard that same comment about Gallup, New Mexico, and I'm not sure why.
Well, but that may have changed, Joe, because, I mean, Gallup, New Mexico's got a lot of oil production under it, that's for sure. But the Bakken Shale has produced a lot of millionaires that were just sod farmers from back in the day, man. And now they ain't sod farming no more, man. They got the fattest cows and the nicest grass. And, you know, I mean, those people are reaping the benefits of the good old black gold and crude oil that's come out of our ground that we keep needing to keep getting more of. That's for sure.
Next up, this small town is located in the heart of the fertile Tualatin Valley. It is part of the Portland metropolitan area, and it's an agricultural paradise, and it's home to the Pacific Northwest oldest golf course, Forest Hill. But folks, staying at the Grand Lodge, beware, because of the ghost of a white-haired woman in a print dress and slippers just might come visit it. This is for Cornelius, Oregon. Joe, what is this?
Oh, you got to explain it. You got to explain it.
Yeah, the Grand Lodge is between Cornelius and Forest Hills there.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't want to go there.
And there's known for a ghost that people see there.
I ain't doing it.
Here's Gil.
No spooks.
I ain't doing it right.
No hainted, no hainted stuff for me, buddy.
What is hainted, bro? What is hainted?
Haunted turned from Texan. Hainted.
Okay. Hainted.
Straight hainted. We ain't hate. Doing. Yeah.
So Gil stayed in room number 30 of Eagle Nest, New Mexico.
Ain't doing
never
it right,
again. Never again, never again in my life.
What happened there, Beto?
And look, man, I love the little town of Eagle's Nest. Good folks, good people, great food. But I ain't staying in that hotel ever again. Never.
What
not
happened,
in that room.
Bro? Tell us the
not
story.
Not in that room, man. It, yeah, it's bad, man.
So
you,
get this.
You know, when you go to sleep at night, you know, when I sleep pretty sound, but when you go to sleep at night and you wake up in a sound sleep and your eyeballs, you're looking at the ceiling, it's black as night in there. But let me tell you something. I heard somebody sit down on the couch. It's a leather couch. I heard somebody sit down on that couch across from me.
Oh,
and then I looked up on the ceiling, and it was like this demon looking down at me, man. And I'm like, what in the world?
You're
and
listen, chill,
I
sleep with
my, I got chill bumps telling it. I looked up on the ceiling and I'm like, man, I don't know what that is, but I got to get my pistol, you know? And I'm just, my hands over there underneath
okay.
me.
So you were okay. Look at this, man. He thinks he's seeing a demon. He thinks he's seeing a ghost. And his first reaction is, I'm going to get my pistol.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I got my pistol in my hand and then I noticed I heard, like I said before, I heard something sit down on that sofa that's across from me. And I mean, it's like, it's like you can hear the leather stretching. Dude, I shot straight up and turned my light on, you know, and now I'm freaked out. I'm like, I know. And it felt like something pushed down on my end of my bed.
That boy was into a like, bottle of Black Label so deep.
Negative Ghost Rider. I was not even high, or drunk or anything like that.
Oh, man.
And so this went on, man. I went back to sleep and it woke me up again. We're about an hour and a half, dude. And, it woke me up three times and I had to get up all three times and go look throughout the, I mean, dude, it was such a presence in there. Right. And then I got to feeling like, well, okay, even if there is a presence, it's just wanting me to acknowledge it being here. So man, I'm telling you, I hit my knees and I got to praying. And, like my mama would do and man, casting out all these demons and everything, dude. And it finally got me to where I could go back to sleep. And, anyhow, that stuff's for real, Joe. You don't mess with spirits and ain't it?
No, hey, look,
spirit world's real.
I'm a believer, man. I'm a believer.
Well, Joe said apparition. I was like, oh, damn.
All right, Gil, you're up next, man.
Up next, this town is a transportation center located in a major coal mining region that was named after a Civil War battle in New Jersey. During the Civil War, residents torched their homes and moved out to keep Union soldiers from using their supplies. Though it gets mixed up with familiar namesake up north, this city is the heart of Mercer County in Princeton, West Virginia.
Princeton, West Virginia in the house.
Yes, sir.
Now you want to talk about Hainted? I guarantee you it's Hainted with a bunch of apparitions.
What?
All right. Joe has me leading in with this. This is so not me. Here's some pretty cool facts.
Hey, you know what? You sounded so good right there. You ought to work on using that in your repertoire, bro.
Yeah, that's funny, man.
This city was the original home to the NFL Seattle Seahawks, which had its headquarters on the shore of Lake Washington for the first 10 years. It was also the headquarters for Costco until the chain moved its headquarters to Issaquah, Washington. Costco's signature brand of products bear the city's namesake, Kirkland, Washington.
Kirkland, Washington.
Cool. That's right. It does.
That's where the name
is. It does. Yeah.
When we went to Canada, Joe, we bought a lot of stuff from Costco and it had Kirkland's on it.
Kirkland on it. Yep.
Sure did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had no idea, man. That's
fact.
I thought that was a pretty cool fact, guy.
Apparently, because you put it in front of mine.
I read it. I'm like,
but do it. All right,
do
guy.
I talk like that,
guy. I, what I want you to do is just slow it down and do it with the voice. Now watch how it sounds.
Here's some pretty cool facts.
Ah! Killer, dude. Killer, man.
That's some awesome stuff there.
It is, dude.
Okay, let's get to our main content, man. This
main
is what
content.
There we go. There we go, baby.
Y'all, welcome back to our series with the 2023 rifle season happening. Because we want to talk about rifle observations with this as well and the archery season under our belt. We're using our ongoing reflections, observations, and even some fresh takeaways that showed themselves or stood out during the season. So in doing that last week, we started out with the mental part of elk hunting. And when we did that, we talked about the top reasonings, thoughts or mental processes or breakdowns, along with the elements that contributed to those breakdowns that we feel like hurt Hunter's success. And what I told the guys at the end there that, you know, we wanted to go ahead and finish out our thoughts on this. And it seemed like last time what we did was we talked about the problems. We didn't talk about solutions. So what we want to do tonight in our follow-up is we want to give some ideas for overcoming and avoiding these and ways to get through that. And there was some things I actually went through and listened to the show, and there were some things that really stood out to me. Like Guy said, one of his answers was that in order, you know, because of the breakdown, you have to make yourself dead set on a goal. Right. That's one way that he says, you know, I don't care if it's deer, elk, antelope, whatever it is, you got to say what it is you're going to do, and you got to be dead set on accomplishing that goal. Right. So the first thing I wanted to do is when I hear something like that, and I hear people talk about goals all the time, and a lot of times people set a goal without a road to accomplish that goal.
Yeah, you got to have a plan.
Yeah, they don't have a plan to be able to do that. So they're either disappointed or they either accomplish it or they don't, right? So how do you make yourself dead set on a goal? What does that look like? What is it dependent on? And how do you make it a win either way? Or can you make it a win either way? So I wanted to toss that out, first of all.
Yeah, for me, it starts with the plan. You know, you set your goal and you got to make a plan to achieve it, you know. And I'm sure Guy can elaborate even more on that.
I would agree with that to a point, right? If you set a big audacious goal and you don't know how it looks a third of the way there, you sure as crap don't know how it looks two thirds of the way there. Yeah. Right? It's really hard to understand that as you go through that plan or that path or whatever that is, right? But you're never gonna make $1 million with a $5 work ethic. You're just not. And if you say, man, that's a lot of work to get to $1 million and you're used to working your butt off for five and you quit at 20,000, you're never going to realize it. Because if you're willing to settle at that first
hiccup,
easy mark or whatever it is, you're never going to realize it. And you just have to stick to your guns. I mean, what does it look like? It looks like for me on the mountain with elk.
I want to apply it exactly to the elk hunt and what you were talking about.
It looks like a lot of tag soup, a lot of frustration, but Gil said it earlier, right? Failure. Right. And that's how I look at it. And I have to be honest with myself. Right. Okay. That was a failure. Air quote. Right. There's successes in every single freaking failure.
Absolutely.
If you can set back and look at it and say, well, I accomplished X, Y, and Z. I'm this much closer to my goal. Right. Right? And sometimes guess what? You're going to be right there at the precipice and you think you're about to hit it. And guess what? Bam, smacks you right in the kisser and you fall back down. But what do? You just gotta keep going. You got that close and you're getting closer every single season by sticking to the goal. I think I talked to Joe about it. I think I talked to Gil about it, right? If I have this idea of a bull, right? And this bull is a 340 plus class bull. Right. I want the herd bull. I am looking for the herd bull. I'm not setting back off of a herd cow calling and then a satellite walks in. That's not the bull I want. I want the bull. If I take that satellite, I will never realize that herd bull. And every time I take the easy way out and I go and I draw back and I send that arrow on that bull, guess what? That herd bull is further and further and further away. I would rather fall on my face and have a air quote failure season before I give into it. And it's damn hard to do. It is not easy. It's frustrating. There's times I ain't kidding you. This year I got way back in there and I'm by myself and I'm back. And I got this bull 200 yards, 300 yards max below me screaming his head off. I realized where I was at, how far back I was. How am I by myself going to get this bull out of here. And guess what I had to do? I had to sit on that rock, cuss myself. And I was, I'm not going to BS. I was almost in tears because of the frustration, the anguish, physically, mentally beat. But, you know, you settle back from that and you go, wow, that bull was screaming his head off at me. Everything I did, he was screaming his head off. I couldn't, even if he would have come into 10 yards, I couldn't have pulled my bow back and shot him. It'd have been irresponsible. That's just part of it. I'll get there, right? I'll get there, but you gotta be dead set on doing it.
You will. I lived it. You know, these guys will attest, they drug my fat ass up and down that mountain many days in me passing on stuff, man. And it made RC Knock livid. I mean, he can tell you, they both lived it with me. And, you know, they're like, please just shoot one. It'll get easy.
But how many times, Gil, did you tell yourself, man, I should have shot it? Because I've said it a couple of times and I almost acquiesced and gave in to
never
whatever that pressure is that I just want to shoot a bull. Right. Nope. And at the end of the day, man, you're not going to be satisfied if you give into it. You got to hit it.
Look, guy, I wounded a bull my first year and I didn't put my hands on him for 6-8 weeks.
I didn't put my hands on him.
That bull ain't hanging. You ain't, that's a 340 plus bull. He ain't hanging in here. He's at Ross Miller's house. I didn't put my hands on him. Ross Miller found him. You know what I'm saying? That's how committed I was.
Yeah.
So the goal is real. And brother, you're going to get there. Right.
Oh, I'm not worried about that.
I believe that with all of my heart.
That was screaming.
I believe that with all of my heart. And the ethical part of this is you knew that he won, right? And you could have pushed that and killed him, but what are you going to do with him?
Right.
You know what I mean? So you knew.
Joe,
you knew, man, I got myself into this pickle. Now what am I going to do? You know, I can't, there's no way I can get him out. And truth be told, man, We've even coached some guys that have been in that pickle, and had they not had help, they wouldn't have got him out either. You know what I mean?
Go ahead, Joe. So, Joe's itching.
Yeah,
sorry. Go ahead, Joe.
RC, what is your goal, man? What is your goal during the season?
Well, I was going to make the comment is that when we were coaching, we give the kids, we'd always tell them, look, your big goal is like the big bull or whatever, Wednesday. But let's make some little goals. Yeah. Let's make some achievable goals. In other words, you know, I coached the shop put and I said, okay, you know, let's achievable goal is that you're going to throw it at least 1 inch further than you have in the past. And it was achieved and it was like, it was a, oh wow, you know, I can do this. I can do this, you know, and so it's like to me, That's the main thing is that you don't, yeah, you got your big goal, but don't let yourself down by taking in that's all you've got.
What do you think the goal is for 90% of the people out there that's entering the woods with a bow in their hand?
Any elk.
Right.
Yeah. That's my goal though. I think most of the people are, you know, up to be able to harvest and put meat on the table.
Sure.
But yeah, there are, you know, like badass hunters that they have the opportunity to hunt in areas that allows them to harvest big animals. But most of the people hunt in public land. So it's harder to pass on the regular or average bull.
Okay. I mean, you take a look at guy's goal of a 340 bull. Do you know how hard in most of those areas it is to find that quality of a bull? I mean, mm-hmm. in order to have that kind of goal, you need to be in the kind of place that provides that kind of animal, right?
Yeah, right.
I want to catch a 10 pounder everywhere. I want to catch a 10 pound bass every time I go out. But every lake I fish ain't got them.
Of course you, I mean, if you see a 10 pound bass and you see a 5 pound, you're going to be casting at that 10 pounder.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. But every lake you fish ain't got them. Every area you hunt don't have them. That's
you got to do what it takes to find them. That's the thing, right?
And look, I mean, I applaud you for that. I'm never going to talk you off.
That could be unit. That could be age class. That could be genetics. That could be a lot of things.
There's droughts. Drought. There was two bulls out of the umpteen freaking bulls that we were into, there was two bulls that were, one was really close to that if he wasn't just over it, and there was one that exceeded that, and that's the one that bullied me bad.
Grinders tuning in, thank you for listening to the Blue Collar Elk Hunting Podcast. Our goal is to share our knowledge and help you flatten that learning curve so that you too can have some of the very same incredible experiences that have given all of us here at Elk Bros a lifetime of memories. If you like what you hear or see, you can get all of this information plus so much more from our Basecamp Elk Hunting Training Camp. This course will be like nothing you have ever experienced in concept and structure, using success-based coaching techniques that will elevate your confidence and skill sets, allowing you to see, visualize, understand, and relate every coaching point to what lies ahead, the next step, the next thought process, the next success. By tapping my 30 years of teaching and coaching experience, our camps are developed considering multiple learning modes with text, visuals, audio, as well as video. And Basecamp will benefit those new to elk hunting all the way to the 10 to 15 year vet. So if you are looking for that one thing to help you fill that tag this year, invest in the most important piece of equipment there is, you and your elk hunting knowledge. You can find the Blue Collar Elk Hunting Academy and the Base Camp Training Camp at elkbros.com. That's ELKBROS.com. Keep dreaming of the screaming, believing in achieving, and most of all, keep grinding. So
they're there.
And that's your goal. So that's you. That's how you feel. And that's what you set yourself at. Mm-hmm. But when we take a look at people giving up during a hunt, most of the people aren't, you know, their goal that they're dead set on isn't necessarily a 340 bull. It's to be able to get close and to harvest an animal or shoot or kill an elk, right? Okay. That's their goal. So if they make themselves dead set on that's what they're going to do, what does that look like? What is it dependent on, and how can they make it a win? Whether they accomplish that goal or not, right? And you already talked about part of that. You said that there's a lot of wins during the hunt, right? Just encounters, man. If you are constantly into animals, right, that is a huge win, because elk hunting is about opportunities. It's about odds, right?
Right.
Think about all the folks that say they haven't heard, seen, smelt,
correct,
an elk. Yep. Right. I mean,
more
the win
half.
There, you put yourself in the position, right? And these generalizations, I hope no one finds them offensive. It's not what I'm trying to do here, but people get dead set on an area because they see one or two pieces of sign. You know, we talk about it all the time. You know, get out of the area. If you're not seeing that, you're not having success, move. People get set in these areas, and that, you know, 1 mile move, it doesn't really do it. And I witnessed it this season with a couple of different camps, and guys would, you know, you talk to them and it's like, oh, I'm not seeing nothing. But then they're only half mile, maybe a mile away from where they were, dropping into the same drainage.
Yeah.
You're going to have the same result. You're in the same drainage. You know what I mean? And they're not dead set on the goal. Is my opinion of it.
Oh, they're
right?
Pretty much dead set on staying where they're at is what they're dead set on.
Yeah, dead set on that goal means you, in 12 days, we had, no BS, 148 boot miles in 12 days. That's how dead set on that goal you have to be, right?
Yeah.
You can't go and do 4 miles in 3 days and tell me that you're dead set on that goal.
If the elk are there.
If the elk are there, yes, yeah, right? But then that goal is going to be realized a lot faster. But you can't, you can't do that if you're in an area that's not productive. You gotta get out of there and forge through.
No,
right? I don't know what that is, why it's so hard for people to move.
I don't either. You know, one time I was fishing a tournament and I was going 25 miles to go catch fish, and I came in to go get some lunch to where the dock was, and I looked over at this little stretch of bushes right by where we were going to blast off, and I went, man, those look good. I'm going to go over there and fish those bushes before I get or put it on the trailer. I went over there to that stretch of bushes. I made 3 drops, and oh my God, every bass I pulled up was 5 or 6 pounds. I'm like, oh my gosh, look at these fish right here. I've been running 25 miles one way through hell and high water. I mean, literally 3-foot waves and all this other. And if I got a fish tournament today, I'm starting right here, right next to me, right? So again, you know, yeah, the fish were up there, but I didn't need to go that far when I found the right fish where I needed to be. I won that tournament and was sitting, I was eating a cheeseburger at noon with 30 pounds in my box. You know what I mean?
But you had the experience to look over there and go, that looks good.
I would have never known that to go unless I went over there and went and looked in it. It's the same. Our pre-preparation of what we do is so important. Everything that we do relies on our scouting, our e-scouting, understanding where the northern face points, northeast facing points are, understanding your elk habitat, you know, where the feed is, where the water is. All of those things go into us being able to start out in the elk. You know, when you're not in the elk from the start, it's tough, man. Then you're like, God, you're putting on 100-something miles on your feet, man, because you're looking for that right bull, you know. We've been kind of spoiled in places, man. We fire off the first bugle in the morning.
Yeah.
Boom, here it goes, you know. More often than not.
My goal, one of my goals is whenever I'm out, my goal is to not be skunked in seeing or being around an elk every day. So my goal is to always be to where I see an animal. If I get skunked in a day, then I am not accomplishing my goal, and which is in turn not going to help me to accomplish my final goal of killing an animal, because I know it's odds. I know it's about encounters. So my goal each time is to put myself in a situation where I see at least one elk a day. And if I do that, if I'm seeing one elk, there's going to be more elk in that area, right?
Knox, when we were in Colorado, we found out where not to go, right?
Yeah.
For 4 days, we found out where not to go. We could tell everybody, don't go there, because there is not an animal. And the boys, the mafia was like, oh, brother, we're in them, right? Deep. We're not going back in there. And they were gracious enough to go, y'all need to go in there. You know, y'all will kill something if y'all go in there. We're not going in there. They gave us the go ahead. Me and Knox go in there. It takes us half the day to get in there. But at the end of the day, that's on me. But we got it done. You know, there were elk there. Where we were, Joe,
where there's animals, right? The animals.
So Joe, I think the more important part of that question is, how do you make it a win either way?
Yeah.
Right? Because the goals, I mean, Gil stated his, I have mine. You said what yours are, right? There's going to be such a range in those goals. Mm-hmm. You know, making it a win either way is the more important question there, right? And in my head is, did you turn it around, right? From day one to four, were you able to make adjustments and turn that around to get you one step closer? You know, and, you know, did your practice from 1 year to the next, as you learn, you know, the additions to your repertoire, the things you said, oh, I'm not going to do that, didn't work. You know, how do those look as you're going through season and just really taking those mental notes or journaling that stuff down, man? That's where the wins come from.
I think for people that are just starting their journey, there's a lot more of that. I mean, you know, for them to have been in the elk, even though they didn't get a shot, that's a win for them because they might have previously never been in the elk, right? Yeah. And then, you know, not only just being in the elk, but now calling an animal into them, that's a win for them, you know, because now they're getting better at that. For me, at the point I am, you know, right now in my skill set, if I don't put an animal on the ground, there is no other win for me. I just, other than the whole part of the hunt that I just love being there. But as far as my goal, you know, I don't find that other win. It is just how I am. I'm just wired differently that way. But, you know, I expect every time that I get in there, I mean, I still kick myself in the butt because I did not finish in Canada this year, you know, and, I had my one opportunity in a very difficult hunt situation, a critter at 18 yards, and I popped that son of a gun on the shoulder doing something that I have should not have done. And so for me, you know, I'm still kicking myself in the butt for that because I don't accept that for myself. That's just me. That's just how I am. But for other people that are doing this, there's so many cool things that they can still accomplish, right? You know, sure. You're looking at somebody here with 41 seasons under the belt and, you know,
We had guys this year in Camp Joe that had their first season under their belt. Yeah. Seeing elk, getting shoved in front of them, getting bulls called in, you know, about having to dang near die to get to them. But at the end of the day, that's what it takes. Those guys are all the much, much better for them. Our first, you know, guys in our adventure series camp, they were so much better off, you know, this year hunting. You know, Adam kills his bull on the first day last year, and then he's got 14 days of grueling grind, you know, in front of him on the next. And we empathize with him. We know how it feels, you know, it's tough, you know, we were so close in Canada, a lot of us, you know. You and I got close on a big moose too, man. Got so close, but yet that rascal beat us, you know. The elements beat us a little bit. So for me, it's, you know, I'm kind of like Manano anymore. I'm hunting memories too, man. Right. I'm wanting to make memories with my brothers, call, you know, love calling elk. And yeah, if I get one close enough, my goal is always to harvest any legal elk. I'm all in. Now I see a bigger bull, man. I get real excited, you know.
Sure. Manano, let me ask you a question, bud. Can a person prep for the mental draining of a long day, short night, hardly any sleep, not a whole lot of food whenever you're used to it? How do you prepare for that before you get on the mountain?
Man, that's a hard day long, man. That the preparation is just, and be out. I think how I prepare is going out. We got a place to hunt here in Oklahoma, and I go there. I would say like twice a month or three times a month. And I try to hunt the same way that we'll all be hunting on the mountains. So of course the distance that we go on those hunt, man, I'm talking about, New Mexico. It's different, of course, but I always take at least one day, one morning, and just to rest, just to have like good sleep and that's the way my mind works. I need to rest. I would say that, yeah, there's no other way to prepare than
RC.
It's hard, man. It's freaking hard.
I'd have to agree with Manano. I mean, you know, one of the worst things that you can have is the mental fatigue, which is, you know, it's real, and it's beating you every day and beating you every day. You know, you've got to take a little bit of time and just, what do? We always suck in the air. You know, we put our hands up and we just bring in the air and breathe and just enjoy the moment where you're at and, you know, walk along, see a flower on the ground, it, you know, it reminds you of something, you know. Exactly.
Rock.
And it's just, there's a lot of different ways to handle, all of that, Joe, is, you know, you got to get plenty of rest. You got to have plenty of food, plenty of water. There's just a lot of things that you can prepare yourself for, you know.
Yeah, and you can step back and, you know, revise what you have done. Okay, I went this area, I hunt that area.
Yep.
And then you can step back and say, okay, let's do it differently.
Right.
You have to adapt.
Yep.
It's funny, right? Because I take the entire month off and I'll get to work and folks will say, how was your vacation? And I'm like, vacation? I'm going to bed at 11 o'clock to 11:30. I'm getting up at 3 to 3:30. What do you mean vacation?
This is a mental torture game. And I tell people that all the time.
And I say that because that's what you have to prepare for.
Yeah.
That is what you have to prepare for in the off season, right? Mm-hmm. Is the understanding that seven, you know, and maybe I'm an anomaly, right? But that 7 to 10 days that you've taken off, you're not there to be cozy in the canvas wall tent. Right. You're not there to be snuggled up at 9 a.m. at the campfire, in my opinion, right? It's time to go. You have this limited window of opportunity to do this really hard thing. What are you going to do with that time? Are you going to squander 2.5 days because you need, excuse me for the people that do it, sure, because you need a mental break on something that you've been dying to do for 340 days of waiting in the year, and now you're there and you want a rest day?
Thank you.
Some guys have never done it before and they do need it because it's wore them out. And now that they've gone through it one time, guy, maybe they're a little better prepared for it on the next go round, you know?
Okay. Exactly. If you don't know what to expect, I get it, right? If we're talking to the first time guy, I would expect that guy to go a little bit harder. Maybe, right? Because they're
not
geared up, right? And maybe they burned themselves out because it wasn't what they thought it was going to be, right? Maybe they weren't full on prepared. But, man, 7 to 10 days, I waited 300 and some odd days. Man, I'm utilizing that 7 to 10 days to the best of my ability. That means go, 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 go. Get beat, whatever. You just keep going.
Yeah.
And I think that's where Joe – and I'm making an assumption about Joe's success here, but that's where Joe succeeds, is because that go, 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 I ain't stopping. I'm out here in a singlet and I'm eating peanut butter and jelly and breaking it into fours because it's, you know, 3 days in the rain. Go, go, go is what adds or lends itself to that. I don't want to say successful hunt, that notch tag, right?
Yeah.
It's not sitting in camp. I mean, it's just not.
Yeah, well, you can't kill them. I mean, I guess you could, but it's very hard to achieve the bow hunting thing that we do by sitting in camp. I mean, look, we've had elk come through camp, but at the end, sniffing generators and stuff like that. But it's crazy the stuff that we've seen. Yeah, I mean, if somebody had been ready, they'd have killed a bull and a cow right there. But look, the preparing for that mental break, right? Or, preparing for
harm,
no sleep and not much food to eat. I reserve the right to not do that.
I mean, so, suck it up, Buttercup.
Yeah. I mean, I know how I like to hunt, and have we gone hungry? Yeah, I mean, you know, we've been on pack outs and stuff like that. That's, you know, tough, but you know, we're always going to have something in our pack that we can gnaw on to get us by. You know, I mean, I'm not going to go hungry, and I sure ain't going to do without water if I don't have. I mean, guy, I know you kill your filtration system, so if you got a stream close by, you can get plenty of water. But I think the most important thing, though, brother, is getting your rest and hydration when we talk about being in the altitude and being in the elk woods.
I mean,
hydration and rest, I think, are your key
factors. Especially if you're coming from someplace else, because I don't drink that much when I'm out there. But I don't know why. I just don't really drink a whole lot. And
I don't know, Joe. I got an empty bottle of Peach Crown that says you do.
there's a lot to be. I mean, hydration is important, right? I mean, that's huge. I'm not discounting that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot to be said about your mental stability and the caloric intake, right?
No doubt.
Most of the time we're on the mountain, we're running at a deficit, right? And if you're not good on your calories, you are going, your body's going to tank and your mind's going to tank. And which one goes first? Oof. That's the hardest to overcome is that caloric deficit.
The best thing I can tell people, man, is when you're hungry, you eat. When you're thirsty, you
drink. Especially when you got a Manano in camp.
And, well, no, I'm not talking about, I mean, that's
I'm just joking.
That's like, yeah. And look, I really believe that there's a lot of ways to get your rest by changing the way you hunt to the way the elk are living. You know, like you're the most active when they're the most active. You're the most sedentary when they're the most sedentary. You know, take those breaks so that, I mean, there's times, man, I'm walking through the woods and I'm like, okay, I know at this point I've just got done. I've been working, getting these guys up to their bed. They're in their bed. Man, it's time for me to catch some Z's too, you know, and I'll catch them at that point. And then I'm already in position. And I think a lot of times, I think the reason some guys get so tired is they do all of this to get out there and then they got to go all the way back. Yeah. And then what are you going to do when you get back, man? You're going to hit the friggin' bed and that is one of the best sleeps and it gets really deep. It's hard to get up from, you know, and you can do that same thing in the mountains. So I think if you learn to adapt yourself to what the animals are doing out there, because that's what you're chasing is, when they're sleeping, I want to sleep. When they're resting, I want to rest. When they're being active, I want to be active. You know, when I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm tired, I sleep, you know. Yeah. And
Forrest Gump style.
But I'm out there in the woods, man. I'm in the daggum woods.
Yeah. Go ahead, guy.
A good example of what Joe was saying, right, is if you're hearing bugles call it from 5:30 in the morning to, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock, and then you're said, okay, well, we heard those bugles. We know what time this is. And you got a 3-mile pack in, 4-mile pack in from camp in some pretty heavy country, but you're waiting until 5 o'clock to get up to make that pack in. You're wasting that time, right? So get up a little earlier, get to where you need to be when they're active in that window of time. And then when they're not active, go ahead and kick the feet up, put the head on a log or the pack and catch some Z's then. Right. But don't wait until, oh, it's, you know, 5 a.m. rise or right before sun, you know, no, you got to be where you need to be when they are active.
I think that everybody needs to learn how to do a power nap.
Yeah. Good 15-minute power nap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to have a 10-minute power nap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. RC, now we both do that in camp a lot. You know, we get in there, we don't stay in the barrack for 2 hours. You know, we take a 30-minute power nap and get back up. And I was saying last year, Joe, Larry Gill and I had made this unbelievable ascent through this horrible deadfall to this top of this ridge. And I mean, it was brutal, absolutely horrible. And we get up in there and it's like 9:30, 10 o'clock, 10:30. And I'm like, man, I'm tired, you know? And I'm like, are you tired? He goes, yeah. I said, let's get us a little bite to eat and sit down here and let's just get quiet here in the woods. I said, I'm going to take me about a 15-20 minute nap. And he's like, okay, sounds good to me. He goes, I'm tired. So we just laid down, you know, laid down.
Yeah, animals walk in on you, yeah. Huh?
Oh my gosh. I hear something kicking around below me and I'm like, bear, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, I got a bear walking in here on me. And I look up and when I look up, it's a mane of a bull. I can see this brown mane coming out of the bushes and I'm like, oh my God, that's not a bear. It's a daggum bull. And then he turns his head and he's a pretty nice 5x4, turns his head. And I'm like, oh man. And I see some legs walking up behind him. And there's 3 other bulls, 4 bulls together walking up the ridge. They ain't 25 yards from me. And I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to manage this? Larry's asleep. You know, I'm like, good night, nurse. I said, I'm just going to have to let them walk on by us. You know, I said, that's the only way I'm going to let this go. And I happened to have my wind snuffer bottle in my pocket and I pulled it out and hit it and the wind's going the opposite direction. I'm like, oh my gosh, how could we get this lucky? Mm-hmm. Right. So bulls go right on past me. I reach over and grab a stick and I throw it at Larry. Hit him right in the chest with it, about scared him half to death. He woke up and I said, I had my finger over my mouth. I'm like, shh. I said, bulls, 40 yards. And he's like, his eyes got that big around. I said, get your bow. So he rolls over and real calmly gets his bow, gets an arrow knocked. I take my bugle tube and I'm laying flat on the ground and I go,
Yeah.
Man, it's like a herd of buffalo coming off of the mountain above me, man. Here they come, and they stop 25 yards. I look, Larry's at full draw. I'm like, oh, dude, this is it. This is it. I mean, I'm ready for him to send it. And Larry decides to pass or didn't like the shot or whatever it was. But again, man, we were asleep. That's how fast that turned around. But it's because we were in the woods, not
because you're
back
in the woods.
The truck or not so, back, you know, at camp, you know.
So there's two things. There's two questions I really want to get to in these next 20 minutes. So I want, and one of them is going to be on cues and the other one is this, because there are people that need that mental physical break sometimes, like what Guy was talking about. So with such limited time, man, what part of the day or the hunt? And I'm thinking archery, and we can take this to even rifle if you want to. But, and I think it even really applies sometimes for rifle, man. What part of the day or the hunt would you use to be able to get that break? If you were to give yourself time off during the hunt, what part of the day would be best to do that and why? Would it be a whole day or as a way to do that within the hunt where you're still utilizing the best hunt time?
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
I would cut the morning. I would hunt the morning early in the morning, and if I don't see, you know, movement, hear something or sign, I would go back by 8:39 and then take a good rest too. 3:34, you go back, you know, like 5 or 6 hours.
Okay.
That would be enough.
So Manano's the morning period, resting in the middle and going back in the evening. Anybody else?
I guess it depends on how far gone you are.
Yeah.
Right. I was about to say that this past season was brutal as far as getting to the area where they were. So I put together almost 80 miles, taking out the day that I used the bike. So I was tired. I was pretty tired.
Okay.
Like I took one morning, Guy says it all depends of the area where you hunted.
And how bad you feel.
Far gone you are mentally.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but the question is, what part of the hunt? Would it be a day or there would be a part of the day if you needed to take that break that you feel would be the best time to still give you quality hunt while you're doing it? So Manano's like, hunt the morning.
Yeah, it would depend on how bad I'm feeling. If I'm mentally spent, my tail's been whipped, you know, I've been so close and, it's like them 3-2 counts when you're a pitcher, man. If you, every batter, you're going 3-2, 3-2, 3-2. These are pressure pitches you're having to come up with to get out of these jams, right? So when we talk to our athletes from my females that we coach in softball, a game that looks really easy for them, even though they're winning 4-0, they've been in so many tight jams with the bases loaded. All of those pressure pitches
drain them, right? They drain their mentality. They drain their physicality too. And it's the same thing with us on the mountain. All of the situations we put ourselves in, especially if they're stressful, especially if we've been so close, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've been with Joe and we get so close. I want to cry. You know, it's like, man, how in the world did that not happen? RC and I in Canada, how in the world did we not put our hands on that bull? You know, we were so freaking close, three days in a row.
What were the most productive parts of the day on that hunt? Where were the
morning time was the most productive day.
The most productive in the morning,
It was the most productive for us. So if we were going to take time off, and we did. We did. We took a day where we didn't even go out that evening. We actually went grouse hunting and moose looking and stuff like that. And that helped a lot.
So what would you like when, for me, my most productive times that I feel like are morning and midday. I feel like if I am getting on critters in the morning and I'm following them to their bed or I get at that midday madness right in there, I think that is probably the most productive
prime time. I agree. I especially as a bow hunter, because I don't really like shooting something real late at dark, because then you got all the tracking problems that come in with it. If it's a marginal shot, you got to let them lay overnight. When you shoot something in the early morning or mid morning, or even in the afternoon, you got all day to mess with it. You know,
I'm just saying that. Look, if I'm not going to do all day and I have to take something as far as a break, I think I can still get in quality hunt day by doing that morning, that midday to that afternoon, and then I can actually get some rest and even maybe do some night bugling and be ready for the next morning, just because I've relaxed in that evening. Because if I've had any time that is the least productive, it's waiting, unless you know how to get in those transition areas. I find that most people are really find themselves, I hate to race the sun, and I find it's always racing the sun. We get on a critter, we get on them, and man, we're trying to get into them, and while we still have shooting light, right? A lot of times you end up in a situation where I think if you were anything and you got one located, you should probably just back out of there and get out there and go get it in the morning, man. But I that's what I would, you know, when I take a look at it, when I look at all these years, and yes, I've killed bulls in the evening and I've killed bulls because I stay out there and I get there in the dark. But if I had to take a break, if I'm really getting worn and I had to pick my poison, I'm telling you, I'm still going to hunt that morning and try to get those boogers all over that midday. And if any place I'm going to get some rest, it's going to be in that evening time so that I'm fresh again to go at it in the morning and maybe even do some night bugling that night, you know, but
I agree, Joe. What's our window in the evening? We really get down to that really crunch time between 5:45 and dark, right? I mean, so you're looking at maybe a couple hours of really where that crunch time comes in. Those bulls are coming down. They're sounding off up there. I mean, even in this rifle season, they would come down and it'd be slap dark 3-4 minutes past legal shooting light before they pop out. You know?
I think a lot of rifle hunters lose out because they're not out there trying to glass them up in beds, man. I think. And then, so what are they doing? They're waiting for that last 15 minutes of the golden hour for an animal to come out into a park so they can get them, right?
And you run out of light.
Yeah. Now, the great thing about the rifle season is the days are shorter and the nights are longer, so you get more rest. But you talk about archery season, y'all. Archery season, man, it's not getting dark till friggin' 9 o'clock, right?
Man, in Canada, they don't get dark till 11 o'clock.
Exactly.
So, you can hunt all day and most of the night.
Then we have to cook.
So,
Joe,
go ahead, Ty.
And I'm making an assumption, right? But it sounds very base camp oriented the way we have presented it so far, right? If you're living out your pack and you're back country, you know, there's some variation to the answers here, right?
Absolutely. Sure.
So I just want to, you know, be clear there.
Right.
We are talking about base camp.
Right. But however,
even if I was doing it with my pack, I mean, I can always sleep where I hear those critters and not have to dark, right? So I can relax in that. And and generally I think I am when I talk about this, because I hear from the guys that, especially people that are into the camaraderie or into the camp. And look, here I feel really is, you know, if you want to sit around a campfire, then go camping. That's how I feel. But when I'm hunting, I want to friggin' hunt. That's just how I am, right? But I do understand the camaraderie. I understand the part of that enjoyment that people get out of that, right? But
get her number and call her in October.
You know, it's kind of like that's – I just feel like if you go – if you really need that mental break – And you have to have that. I want to give people what I feel is the best time for that to happen. If you're going to, even if you're leaving and you're going into town because you need a change of venue, man, or, you know, you're just going to kick it with the other guys and just relax it for a little bit in the evening and then get yourself out there in the night, do some night bugling and then get ready for the morning again, just to gather yourself. So this is just again for this section on the mental elk part of it. Am I saying that you need to hunt in the morning and noon and then give up in the evening? No, I'm not saying that. But if you are at that point where you still want to be effective and you're having trouble getting that rest and getting up, that's where I would pick my poison. That's what I'm saying with that.
Yeah. And again, if you're that far gone mentally, go off the mountain, go get a burger, go have a pizza, go call mama. Go get a shower, whatever it is, right? Yeah, if you're that far gone, because I've seen a lot of guys do it, right? Well, they'll get to the point where they're ready to quit. And if you're at that ready to quit point, just don't quit. Go down the mountain, refuel, you know, get some comfort food or get RC to send you some cowboy cobbler and, you know, and legitimately take that day, right? It's a regret. You're going to miss that day, but it is what it is. At least you kept hunting the rest of your
life. But another thing is you have to be comfortable in the woods. I would say that 5 out of the 7, 8 days we had, I stayed the whole day in the woods. But I got my hammock and I spent the whole day in the woods and I was comfortable because it was a long, long walk to get to the point.
When Luis does that, what does he say he's missing out on, man? I mean, he'll go hunt hard. But he says that he really feels like he missed out on in the that enjoyment of camp, right?
Yeah. Well, he must have like a comfortable triple A bedroom.
You know,
I enjoy my hammock, but that's the way I rest in the woods.
Some of the cues for me though, Joe, when I'm up against it, man, is I know I have to pace myself through the whole day, right? I got enough in the tank and, you know, I have asthma. I have a lot of other things that I know that I have to do to make myself be able to, when it's time to go, right? So I take it easy. I try to absorb the sign, really analyze the woods, analyze when we're in somewhere. I'm constantly thinking, okay, well, this sign is this, or what are we picking up here? We're constantly trying to read the area and read what's in front of us. So I'll go slow, man. I go slow. I take my time in the area. We really dissect it. And then I really dive into looking deeper into that, right? Trying to find a bedroom as well. When you can find these bedrooms and stuff like that, those are like magical places that are going to turn any day are going to turn huge, productive, right? And, when you can find those areas and you know the elk are frequent in them, you're going to be a lot more successful. And then you can really go slow, spend your time in those areas. You know, guy did it this year when he was just spending his time in an area with Dr. Bob and they called in a big bull that was really pretty silent the whole day, but they heard him make a couple of little sounds up there in his bed and they finally got him to come out and he was a hog, man. Absolute giant, you know, but no,
I totally feel the whole day is the way to go. But again, while we're talking about the mental aspect, we were trying to, maybe if you take that afternoon, you don't get to that point that guy's talking about where you have to just get off the mountain. There might be times that you can, you know, find a little bit break in a time of that day. So what I want to do now is I want to go to this last question, because I really think this is something special to really help people out there. You know, as a coach, we help our athletes get through difficulties, issues, event struggles with cues, with words or sayings that help them visualize, understand, or reset themselves mentally for the task at hand. So what cues would you develop or have you develop for yourself to help you get through the mental difficulties? Like, for example, you know, one of the ones that I use all the time that I tell people to kind of help them stay focused is zero to hero in 15 seconds, right? That's one of the cues that I want people to, and what I mean by that is, you know, you can be hunting for days and days, and we hunt for days for moments, for those moments that are short right there. So
looking at a bull on my wall, it was 15 seconds from us turning around and giving up.
Yep.
I mean, we were done. We just poked our head over this ridge and made one bugle, and then blew up like a dang time bomb down there. And we hadn't heard nothing all evening, remember? And we went 3 or 4 miles, man, through some really tough terrain. Manano on my six the whole time with a camera. And I mean, we make one bugle, one cow call and one bugle, and boom, here it is. And it wasn't one bull. It was a whole herd of bulls down there with cows and everything.
Do you have any other cues, bro, that you use for yourself?
Yeah, for me, man, it's slow down. When you think you're going slow, slow down. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's about going slow and about analyzing the area. For me, it's, you know, when you're going slow, slow. You think you're going slow enough, slow down some more, you know. And that's kind of one of the things that helps me go through the mountain, you know, and know that, okay, that 1,200-foot climb is going to be – it's going to be rough, but I'm going to do like Guy says. I'm going to look down at my feet, put one foot in front of the other, you know.
So you're kind of like, you know when to go slow and when, you know, it's sometimes it's.
Go slow and then go hard, yeah.
Yeah, you know when to go hard. What about you, Manano?
Yeah, I would say the same, Joe, because the first part of this hunt, I put up a lot of miles, and I saw 22 out. So I was in elk all day.
But you have video on that? Your camera?
Yeah, I do. I do, actually. But hey. I had to step back because they were like a rifle distance, all of them.
Yeah, 1,000 yards.
Yes.
A so, good 1,000 yard rifle.
100, 150, 200 yards.
Yeah.
But another thing was, you know, the main factor was the private land. They were right on the border. So, yeah, I would say that, yeah, go slow. It's time to go hard. Yeah.
Okay, go slow. So there's the cue, right? Go slow till it's time to go hard, right?
Yeah.
What about you, Guy?
I've said it this whole podcast. I've said it, right? I was trying to think of what that cue is, right? But I'll never succeed if I quit, right? I'm not going to succeed if I quit.
Can't succeed if you quit.
Right. So, that is it. I mean, that goal, that, you know, big audacious goal
never
that I set.
Up.
Right. Nope. That is my cue. I mean, there's nothing else about it except it needs to be done. What are you going to do to get it done? And I tell myself that a lot. And when I start to, you know, feel sorry for myself, feel beat up.
That bottom lip out.
Yeah. I'll sit on a log and I'll talk some legitimate smack and have a conversation about how big of a blah, blah, blah I am, you know, and it's like, how are you going to do it if you are going to quit? If you're ready to go back to camp, or if you're ready to go back to the side by side, or you're ready to go back to base camp, how are you going to succeed? And that's just what keeps me going.
Good cue. RC?
Well, I'd have to say the same thing, is never give up. But one of the things that I always do is I always use the thing about the red dot. Where am I going to shoot? I've taken lots and lots. I've never wounded an animal, knock on wood. but I've taken lots of shots because I didn't have my spot picked out. So I always have that in my mind, the red dot.
That's
so
your cue,
I'm going,
red dot.
That's my cue. Yeah, exactly. So when I see an animal, where's his red dot? If it's a cow, deer, coyote, whatever, where's that spot? So.
Yeah, when I get in that kill mode, brother, it's all looking right where I want it to go, you know. And we don't take our eye off of that much, you know. For me, Joe, too, work smart, not work hard. I'm a guy who likes to use the technology that we have to understand areas, and try to, you know, help myself work smart and not hard. You know, there's a difference in, necessarily working hard and working smart. When you figure out a way to work smart and, it can take some of that burden off of you, it helps. When you don't have the opportunity to be able to use the tools that are at your disposal, it hamstrings you. You know, and it can make you unsuccessful. You know, what makes our crew so successful is the diversity we have within everybody. You know, that's what makes this crew so successful in being, and the fact that we're all kindred spirit. None of us have that quit in them. We all got that dog in us, right? And, it's when you're stressed and when you're squeezed that dog comes out. You know, and I can attest to every one of these guys I've been in the woods with here. They all got that big dog in them, right? And love each and every one of them for it. And I know, you know, that they'd do anything for me and, you know, I'd do anything for them to help them out. So, for me, it's about, like I said, working hard, working smart and not working hard.
I'm going to read out. I've got some actual cues that I want people to hear. And if you guys want to throw in like a comment on them, then that's great as well. But, here's some of the cues that I constantly try to think about or things that are going through my head or that I tell other people. One is, what are the elk doing right now? Where are they doing it? Am I there? And that's something that goes along with another one that I tell myself that's right along those lines, is that don't hike in hope, hunt. So if at any time I find myself walking without, you know, I'm going, man, am I just hiking and hoping, or am I actually hunting? Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. Again, I go back to, what are the elk doing right now? Where are they doing it? And am I there? Because again, you got to be in animals to be able to hunt.
The basis.
Yeah, you know, RC and I hunted an area this year together, and I bet we did a lot more. We didn't hike a whole lot. We hunted, man. And I mean, we hunted every little sign that we could find. I remember going through some really, really tough downfall and stuff like that coming out of there. But when we hunted our way into it, it was very evident that the elk had been in there and had frequented that area quite a bit. But, you know, and we had the wind, we had everything we really needed to be successful, just minus the elk. You know, they didn't show up, and we called and did what we knew to do. And, you know, they weren't there, but we slipped in there real quiet. Like I said, for me, it was hunting. Every step for me is a hunt. You know, I'm trying to find something that sign, trying to get in there and go slow. You know, me and Dr. Bob run up on some mule deer and I had a mule deer tag, and daggum, them mule deer got by me again. You know, then my daggum nemesis, I even got the full draw, Joe, and the dad rascal decided to run across the road instead of walk. And, but we never find those mule deer if we're not going slow enough.
Yeah.
You know, we never even see them if we're just blowing through an area. You know what I mean?
And I'll just read these cues off, and if something you guys want to, elk hunting is about will and weakness. My will to find their weakness. Okay. If I can kill silent elk, I can kill any elk.
Yeah.
I'm not the same old rodeo. And I feel like that's a huge one, man. I mean, I think that, you know, giving them something different. I actually had somebody that was telling me and talking to me that said that they heard us say that we could call in elk just with raking, glunking, moaning. And he was like, I thought y'all were full of it. And then I did it and it worked. You know, because I wasn't
right situation, right time, man.
Yep. Elk respond with more than just a bugle. Always tell yourself that, man. I joined that with hunt elk, not bugles. Okay. Another one is elk work in their time, not our time.
Big right there, buddy. Mm-hmm. That's probably, yep. I really like the first one in terms of cues. Yep. That one right there. That's 90% of, you know, people walking away and
we're on their time. That.
Yeah. We are on their time.
You're living in their world.
Trust the playbook. Believe in the process.
Yeah. You got to trust that the work you put in prior to making the play is worthy. You'll find out if it ain't, I promise you.
And I think a big cue that I have is I can do this. And that's where, you know, something that Guy was talking about, you know, yes. before, you know, so that's just, some of the cues that I put it in there, take it in, enjoy the ride. Don't take it hard, work smart, not hard. And you know, all those things that we were talking about, these are cues that, and you each got to find these, you got to find them that when you are having, when you're struggling mentally out there, you know, when it's just starting to be just a grind, the grind comes from, you know, being out there day after day and, you know, doing the early mornings and doing the late nights and that's just the grind right there. But that doesn't mean that it has to grind on us mentally. I think a lot of times we do that to ourselves. And I think we can actually, life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we take
it. We deal with it. Yep.
Yep. So we can either make things harder for ourselves that are easier for ourselves. And when I'm hunting the hunt, when I'm loving to hunt the hunt, it's not hard, man. It's just, that's why I'm there. And like Guy said, we waited 350 days.
I was going to say that. Yeah.
Right? And there's a cue right there. I've been waiting 350 days to do this. I can sleep when I get home.
Exactly.
How bad do you want it? There's your cue.
Yep.
How
bad do you want it?
So, when we come back next week, guys, what we're going to do next week is we're going to talk about the most common mistakes that we saw, and that we're seeing and that we're hearing about, you know, from folks out there. And we're not only going to give those mistakes that are happening. Again, we want to talk about solutions as well. We want to point those out, because I see so many of them and I hear so many of them. And when I say mistakes, you know, are we saying that people are doing things wrong? Well, these are things that we feel people do that hurt their success. You can still do these things and still be successful.
Trust.
Yeah. But
15 seconds.
15 seconds.
But to be consistently successful year after year, there's some things that you got to kind of get out of your system. So that's going to be next time.
Fantastic, Joe. Look, I think this series is important. I mean, it dives in depth on the mental preparation that we've all gone through and the mental anguish that we've all gone through on the mountain. And you guys at bow hunt and rifle hunt here in the Western states, man, you know, altitude's a real thing. You know, you've heard Guy talk about it. You know, it's very hard to prepare for that when you're coming from the flatlands. But you know, if you listen to our podcast, you go to base camp, stuff like that, we do our best to try and prepare you ahead of time and understanding, you know, what's ahead of you. I really didn't understand it. Carl Gamage, you know, made it sound like Tyrannosaurus Rex were going to run up and eat me. And, by the time I was done, I wished one would have. I mean, it was that tough. I mean, so at the end of the day, you know, you just got to grit your teeth and understand that it's going to be a lot tougher than you imagined and, you know, prepare yourself every day. And, you know, we're blessed to have this opportunity to tell you about how we like to do things. And, you know, you got Manano Grataron was one of the you know, toughest guys on the mountain you'll ever want to meet. Guys the same way, great fortitude and, you know, the legend and Joe, these guys just won't let you give up. I mean, that's the beauty of this crew is they just won't let you give up. And, you know, guys, if you like what we're doing, man, you've got to subscribe, rate and review. You got to go to Apple Podcasts or iTunes to review us and be sure to include your name, where you're from to get in on our drawing. And that means that you can do the spinner winner wheel, right, Joe?
Yes, sir.
And you can check out more elk hunting content at elkbros.com. Also be looking out on Elk Bros Adventures. You know, we'll, have some exciting news coming up there for sure, coming up for next year. Guys, if they don't know it, that, you know, we are outfitters in New Mexico. So, we have some really, cool things that went off this season that I'm sure Joe will get to and talk about. Well, we got some really fun plans for next season as well. And just a reminder, if any of our listeners would like to, have their questions answered on our show, you can send your questions to info@elkbros.com. That's info@elkbros.com. And like we say down here in the Lone Star State, husbands, kiss your wives. Wives, kiss your husbands. Hug your babies. Keep your broad heads sharp and your powder dry. And we'll see you next week right here on Blue Collar Elk Hunting.
Peace, peace, everybody.
Peace.
Peace.
For all our grinders peace out there, here's some more music from our brother from the West, Tony Wintrip.
And it's his new album, y'all. This is new stuff coming out from Tony. Incredible. Night, everyone. Good night.
Writing songs, not knowing where I'd go when I left the diamond where I played ball. I started raising babies, I had a changing life. I took the drifter's role, ended up with one ex-wife, but I never gave up on it. Yeah, I knew how bad I wanted a brand new me. I hit a few bumps in the road, but I kept driving on. Behind, gotta clear my head and maybe add a little salt and a lime and enjoy my freedom. Got a few on love, wanna leave them upside down. I hit a few bumps in the road, but I kept driving on, running big machines and thinking about writing songs. Now I'm up against it, time to walk away. I'm showing signs of getting older now, but they are. Quit on me. Don't quit on me.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew here at Duck Camp Dinners every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. Birds up in the sky.